This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
From the American Museum of Natural History in New York City and beaming out across all of space and time, this is Star Talk, where science and pop culture collide. Welcome to Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. We've got a Cosmic Queries edition of Star Talk. The subject, bioethics. My co-host, Paul Mercurio. Paul.
Nice to see you.
Welcome
again.
Back, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Thanks for making some time for us before warming up Stephen Colbert's audience.
So you're right down the street.
Yeah, which is up the street from you from here. Yeah.
And you provide a limo, which is nice.
Did we?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you're not a bioethicist.
No.
Neither am I.
No.
Even though we might have thoughts on the matter.
Yes.
Right?
And every day, I'm constantly... I wake up and go, what is going on ethically?
Bioethically, yes. So we went back into our Rolodex and re-invited Professor Matthew Liao. Matthew, welcome back to Star Talk.
Thank you.
So we last had you on stage live in front of an audience at New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Adam Savage with us as well. And we were talking about human augmentation and whether that would be bioethical.
Mm-hmm.
And you said off camera, you remembered that that was my birthday?
We sung, right?
Oh, I try to forget. Yes,
I think 3,000 people sung.
They did. They all sang. They all did sing.
Yeah.
It was written on the program that was required when they came in.
Yeah.
So, welcome back.
Yeah.
And good to have you. You are director of the bioethics program.
The Center for Bioethics at NYU.
At NYU, Center for Bioethics. And New York University right here in town.
Mm-hmm.
So easy date for you. So we'll be calling more on you
We
think of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got questions. Paul.
Yes.
I haven't seen them. I don't know if Matthew's seen
them. No, he has not. And we'll just sort of jump right in.
Well, let me just find out. What is bioethics? What's an example? So we're on the same page.
Yeah, it's the study of biomedical issues arising out of biomedical technologies.
Mostly medical now.
Mostly medical, but it could also involve things like artificial intelligence and sort of its connection to healthcare. So
yeah, but AI is not bio purpose.
Right. So right. But it could be
used. So what you want is silicon ethics.
Yeah, silicon ethics. That's right. Well, a lot of people are now thinking about putting in things like brain computer interfaces into their brains and things like that. So the silicon and the organic matter, they're kind of merging.
This complicates your job.
That's right.
What makes it more interesting? Both.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the fastest moving area? Is it AI? Is it genetic manipulation? Like, what's?
Yeah, I think both of them are occurring concurrently. So there's the CRISPR technology, gene editing technology, that's sort of really advancing.
I like that, because if you can mutate my genes so I don't have to go to the gym, I'm your guy.
Is that how that works?
I'm your guy.
That's exactly how it works. You can do it today. And then there's the artificial intelligence. People are using that for things like cancer. You know, their pathologists are looking at sort of these images. The AI is getting really good at pattern recognition and image recognition. Mm-hmm. They can spot sort of cancer cells almost as good as pathologists now.
So. Okay, so but that wouldn't be an ethical thing. That's just the machine can do it better, so let the machine do it.
Right.
Right, so ethics would be now the machine knows your condition and it's connected to the internet.
Yeah.
And so a hacker might have access.
Yeah, or say that, you know, the insurance company knows the algorithms and tries to hack it and sort of make it look like it's not cancer when it is or something like that. Or sort of issues to do with privacy.
Well, he's paid to think about this stuff.
It's incredible. You have a very diabolical mind.
Exactly. Yeah, come up with a way we can foil this system.
Right. When you're out for dinner and in the waitress goes, would you like to have dessert? You're like, what do you mean by that? Are you fun around people? I mean you're fun, but like, do you, like, if they want to do something a little, like, inappropriate, like, put a little extra gas in when nobody notices, you go, like, no, there's an ethical issue there.
How ethical are you is the short question there.
Well, there are surveys that say that ethicists aren't necessarily more ethical.
Oh, really?
So they steal sort of books from libraries and they don't call their mothers, on Mother's Day and things like that. So I call my mom.
Okay, so
on Mother's Day.
Do as you say, not as you do.
That's right.
All right. So what questions do you have, Paul?
Yeah. We're going to start with the Patreon question.
Patreon, let's do it.
Yeah. This is Oliver.
Kiss up to the Patreon.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. We love them. This is Oliver Gigaz. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Mm-hmm. Personally, I feel that we, the general public, aren't talking enough about subjects like bioethics and AI, even though they are clearly going to be a huge part of the future. Do either of you feel the same way? And if so, how can we better educate ourselves on these subjects?
I completely agree. And so one of the things I try to do is to talk to the public about some of these issues and work in this area, things like sort of gene editing and artificial intelligence. Sort
of. How much of it is just fear that people don't understand the technology? And so we fear everything we don't understand. Doesn't it come down to that at some level?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that just people are scared of new technologies. They're very cautious. And there's
also great science fiction writers that take it to the worst dystopic future.
That's right. The robots are after us. They're going to kill us.
Oh, yeah.
The super intelligence is coming. Mm-hmm. And so people get really scared and they think, oh, we should not do any of this stuff. And that's also bad for science. It's bad for progress.
Yeah, but I just bought a car where I don't have a dipstick anymore. And I just hit a button and it tells me the oil
stuff. Really?
Yeah. And I'm a little weirded out by that. Like, I want the physical thing.
Get off my lawn. I'm not an old man yet.
But I don't trust them.
Young whippersnapper.
What if the oil companies have adjusted the program of that so that it's falsely telling me I need oil to make extra money?
Yeah.
We should hang out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you sound like a bioethicist already.
Man. Not to hang you out to dry.
Yeah.
When the dashboard became all screen. Mm-hmm. Without a mechanical speedometer, where it turns on. Mm-hmm. And in what turns on, it has your mileage. And I'm thinking, this is a screen. Come on now.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Wait, there's no mechanical mile. I got all old man on it. I said, give me back my dial.
I'm with you. I unplug my toaster every night because I think it's going to catch fire. I don't know. The whole thing is sort of overwhelming for people on some level.
Yeah, so I think you hit on exactly the right issue. And the issue is trust. Like trust in technologies, trust in algorithms, trust in like how do we make sure that when we roll out these technologies, there's trust. And that's the job of the scientists, but also the ethicists and everybody.
And the educator.
Yeah, and the educator to make sure that we can actually trust these things.
So here's a question that I remembered getting asked of the public. Mm-hmm. And I remembered at the time, what my answer was then, and it still is today.
Mm-hmm.
But the public in the day answered differently. Here's the question. If the something happens, you're on an airplane, and there's something goes wrong with the airplane, okay? And what would you trust? A button that says, auto-fly this thing home, or a trained Navy pilot? Who decorated trained Navy pilot to bring it home. It was the pilot, of course. And I'm thinking, no, give me the auto. like, push the auto button.
Right. What if he just had a fight with his wife and just downed a bottle of scotch in the airport?
That's what I'm saying. The button didn't have a bottle of scotch, guaranteed. So, and today, I mean, what my thinking has borne out, because planes are designed that they cannot actually be flown by a human being. There's too many surfaces that are under control of the computer. That's why flying is so stable now. So that's, do you trust the technology or not?
That's right. Yeah. And so in order to trust the technology, you have to make sure that it's safe, it's tested, it's reliable. It can be sort of adversarially attacked. And that's why sort of ethicists like myself, we ask these questions, like things like, well, what happens, we imagine these hypothetical examples, like what happens if the insurance company is trying to cheat you and do certain things, or, if the hacker is trying to hack into the algorithm, or the imaging thing, like there are ways of, there's plenty of evidence that some of these imaging machine learning technologies can be hacked. Right?
But the thing that's amazing to me is like science, and especially what you do, is so sort of on track with ethics. It's a microcosm, because in the society in general, ethics seems to be the last thing. It's like worrying about table manners at a Game of Thrones red wedding, right? Like you just sort of, you guys have this ability to really think about these things. Like there's this conversation about like, well, AI could like destroy the planet. Well, humans are already kind of doing that. So is it any worse?
Right.
Maybe AI can do it better.
Exactly. More efficiently.
Exactly. Yeah. Dallying about.
Yeah.
Less complaining.
Yeah. Well, that's, so some people think that, the super intelligence, if they were to be created, they're going to decide that, hey, we're destroying the, we're destroying the planet. And one way to stop, to help the planet is by, like, killing all of us.
Because we're a virus.
Because we're viruses. Yeah.
That's the word my wife uses for me.
That's a line from The Matrix.
Hi,
so Paul.
Yes.
You got more questions.
I do.
Go.
Raymond Oyang, StarTalkRadio.net.
Nice.
Question about morals and science. Are there any circumstances in science where it would be acceptable to bypass ethics in human experimentation if the findings would lead to greater good?
Wow.
Ooh, good.
Wow. That's a
Wasn't that the entire Nazi medical enterprise?
Yeah.
and the Tuskegee study?
That's the Tuskegee study as well.
Yeah, just tell us about one or both of those, and then tell us what... That's a great question here.
Yeah, so the Nazis were sort of experimenting on humans. They're sort of, for example, they're taking them up into the airplanes to see how much pressure a human being can withstand.
These are mostly Jews and other undesirables.
That's
in the Germanic model.
That's right.
Of humanity.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they, apparently some people say that they were able to find out, things that we wouldn't have otherwise found. But still, I think that it's very clear now that, we need to sort of abide by these ethical norms, and we shouldn't, we need to stick to research ethics. And there's sort of, there's something called the Bellman Report that came out as a result of the Tuskegee experiments. And
just to describe the Tuskegee briefly.
It's the experiment where there are these subjects and they were given syphilis. And they weren't told that...
I thought they already had syphilis.
They already had syphilis.
But they were told they were being treated, but in fact they weren't.
That's right.
And then the observation was to see the progress of syphilis in the human body.
And
all the subjects were black men.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. After that, when it was discovered, basically that was the birth of bioethics as a field. People decided that we shouldn't be doing this. We need to look at, there were sort of different principles that were being proposed, things like do no harm, You need to make sure that the research benefits the subject, and then you need to make sure that there's autonomy, there's mm-hmm. informed consent. So a lot of the bioethical principles came out as a result.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, do no harm. That's in there.
That's part of the Hippocratic Oath.
That's right.
Yeah, but talk to Mickey Rourke's surgeons. I mean, they're not. They violated that thing 8 ways to Sunday.
Right.
I mean, isn't that sort of part of the the medical field? To me, seems like that was fair to say the first sort of area where bioethics and was sort of really founded in some way.
Yeah.
And yet, it seems like that profession, they're all over the place. I mean, there's pimple popper shows and TLC.
Well, I think maybe their intent is to not do harm, even if they end up doing harm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Plastic surgery. Yeah. It can go wrong, but that wasn't their intent.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like me with a bad joke. Yeah.
You did harm.
It was a lot of harm. That set did a lot of harm.
Yeah.
And I can't bring it back.
Well, okay. So what you're saying is, this is an interesting enlightened posture, which is, no matter what is going on, I will do no harm to you, even if having done harm to you saves the lives of 100 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the individual has the priority in this exchange, relationship.
That's right.
So that's enlightened and even profound, I think. And so,
is the converse of this whole issue with measles now and how, because I'm really fascinated by that. So someone is morally against a vaccination because they think it causes autism, and yet they're putting entire communities at risk, right? What is the conversation in your field now about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And what do you serve at a measles party? Salmonella cake? I'm just curious. what do you... But,
yeah.
That seems to me to be...
Yeah. So my own view about vaccination is that we have a public duty to, you know, be vaccinated.
Right.
And so that comes from sort of not harming other people. So we have an obligation not to harm other people. And so the issue with vaccination is that we also have a right to bodily integrity. So some people think that we shouldn't be forced to be vaccinated if we don't want to. And I think that's right. But I also think that that doesn't mean that we ourselves don't have a duty to be vaccinated. So we should do it voluntarily. So
there's a greater good.
That's right. It's a greater good argument.
That overrides the personal integrity.
Well, personal integrity is something that you can waive. It's your right, but you can waive it, right, in these cases. And so in this case, I think that we have a duty to serve the public by getting vaccinated.
You kind of straddled the fence there a little.
Yeah.
You didn't want to create a law.
You should run for president.
That was good.
You did not answer that question. You know what? That was an unethical answer.
Oh.
No. It's interesting. It's really complicated.
Yeah.
And they actually dealt with a little bit of this in Planet of the Apes, because you have the intelligent chimps, and they're doing medical experiments on the humans that they captured.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that's an abomination because we're human.
Right.
But of course, we do that on lab animals all the time.
That's right.
So who are we to say that they can't do that?
And yet the quality of our life is much better because we do it. So it's sort of this whole balancing act.
Yeah.
That's why we have you.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Not to do experiments on you.
Right.
No, that's next week. You come back and there's a dungeon and we take you there.
But I can't let this go. There's not even some numerical threshold where you would say harm to one person if it saves 100 or 1,000. Or a million.
Yeah.
Or a billion.
So there's this view, it's called threshold deontology. And it's threshold deontology.
Deontology.
That's right. And it's the view that there's a threshold. And when you cross that threshold, then it might be okay to harm somebody in order...
But isn't it arbitrary? Yeah. Who decides what the threshold is?
Yeah, so... Well, part,
that's why we have him.
You're making all of these...
He's the ethicist.
You? I'm leaving.
You're sitting next to an ethicist. Who makes these decisions? He makes the decisions. He and his people.
He has a team.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're absolutely right. So where's the threshold? It's not okay to, say, kill one to save 5 people. But
really?
Is it okay to kill one to save 1 million people?
Right.
Or a billion threshold? People? What's the threshold?
If 1 to 5 is okay.
No, it's not okay. Yeah.
Then you're saying, let's say, no joke here, Neil is 1 of the 5, but then there's 1 million and you're saying it's okay. You've devalued his life based on the number of people in the group.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be any logic to that.
Yeah. So some people say that... Well, if we were to think that it's okay to kill Neil in order to save a billion people.
What?
Say,
how did right? I get in the middle of this?
Well, you're just, you're very smart, extremely intelligent, so you're worth a billion people. I'm worth like a dog. I'm the equivalent of a dog.
Yeah. Okay. Then all of us.
This is like, this is the rowboat thing. Right. Do you throw out Abe Lincoln?
Yeah.
Do you keep the criminal?
Right. That's right.
Like, what do
and
you
by
do?
The way,
that's
how would we kill Neil? Just out of curiosity, would it be a slow death or?
I'm an ethicist.
Way to kill me.
The most ethical
channel
way.
The whole time.
Painless. You know, painless way of doing it. So,
so tell me that it's called the
Threshold Deontology.
Threshold Deontology.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, the view that there's a threshold beyond which it's okay to harm somebody in order to save the greater number.
So at the, towards the end of the movie, The Secret of Santa Vittoria, this is, I don't know if it's fiction or if it's based on a real story. There's a town in Italy that had this, or it might have been France, this amazing wine producing, they're world famous for their wine, and the Nazis were coming through and they didn't want the Nazis to get it. So they hid the wine in a cave and bricked it over and then put moss on it and made it look aged. And then the Nazis came in looking for the wine and they couldn't find it and they scoured the countryside and they decided that whoever's the next person that comes out in the street, they're going to torture them and find out where the wine is hidden. So the townspeople agreed to let the prisoner out of the... They said, you're free to go. And the prisoner... Because the prisoner didn't know any of this.
Wow.
The prisoner was just a thing. The prisoner comes out, and the Nazis torture him.
Wow.
And they couldn't figure out where it was, and the Nazis leave.
Jesus. It would have been hilarious if the guy they tortured was a sommelier, and they just got his clothes. Come on, man. I just got my degree. Really?
And what are you doing in jail, though? All right, we got to take a quick break, and when we come back, more on bioethics.
Yeah.
Really cool when StarTosh continues.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops Driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops Drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limit. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops Driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
Bringing space and science down to earth. You're listening to Star Talk.
We're back on Star Talk. We're talking about bioethics. My co-host, my guest co-host, this episode, Paul Mercurio. Paul.
Hey.
You tweet, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
But give me your Twitter handle.
At Paul Mercurio.
Okay, very creative.
Well, I had my people, we gathered around, we had a long meeting. By the way, it's M-E-C-U-R-I-O, and I only say that because there's an Australian actor, Paul Mercurio, M-E-R-C-U-R-I-O.
Mercurio.
Which is actually how I spell my name, but he got in the Actors Union before I did. He was in Strictly Ballroom and Exit to Eden.
Whoa.
So I did my first guest appearance on a sitcom.
You had to change your last name.
My manager calls it, you have to change your name. I'm like, why, did I bust a law or something? He's like, no, there's this guy. So it's M-E-C-U-R-I-O. And in retrospect, I should have just changed it to like Smith, because it would have been a lot easier.
Mercurio's cool.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the planet Mercury.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And we have Professor Matthew Liao. Welcome. And you're head of the Bioethics Center at New York University. Mm-hmm. And we're reading questions. We've got questions from our fan base.
We have another question for
bioethics.
For Maddie. I'm going to call you Maddie the rest of the show.
All right.
This is Hey Hyder from Instagram. Do you think CRISPR's technology will allow us to take the DNA of an athlete or maybe a bounty hunter, tweak it to be even better and stronger than the original, and then take the DNA and create a clone army? Can we do that? And if so, please send the instructions to my bunker. No, I just added that right now.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So
what's up with that?
So I think that's possible. I mean, sort of the fact that some people are stronger than others is partly genetics, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we can figure out the genome.
But don't say that, because now Paul will say, I'm not getting muscles because it's genetic.
right.
So therefore, there's no point in going to the gym.
The Twinkies have nothing to do with it.
right. I did say partly.
Partly.
Yeah. And so like LeBron James, you know, sort of, because of his genes, right? And so if you can sort of sequence...
Well, he's big because of his genes, but is he athletic because of his genes?
Yeah, he needs to work out.
And, yes, okay.
So there's definitely the nurture part.
You get your height and other things very bluntly from your genes.
That's right. And so we can figure that part out. And then you can imagine using CRISPR technology to then put that into sort of either gametes or embryos and then create, offsprings that have those traits.
So this is in our future?
I think so. I think this is something that can be done.
We will breed into our own civilization entire classes of people for our own entertainment.
Well,
is that anything different from sumo wrestlers in Japan?
It's called the one and done rule in college basketball. Is that what we're doing basically?
Tell me about sumo wrestlers. Yeah. No, it's not a genetic thing, but they're specially treated and specially fed.
That's right.
To be sumo wrestlers.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's a cultural thing. They don't live long, and everybody knows this. I don't think they reach age 40.
Yeah.
So is that really any different? from doing that genetically.
So that's what, you know, so people talk about designer babies and the ethics of designer babies. Like, so there's the question of whether we can do it, but then there's also whether we should be doing this. And I think—
it's very Jurassic Park of them there. Exactly.
And I think Neil asked a really good question.
Do you have an evil lair?
Right, which is that we're already doing a lot of this. You know, this hyper-parenting.
Yeah.
Look at like Serena Williams and, you know, Venus Williams.
Yeah, but that's different than manipulating through CRISPR, manipulating a
but the result
DNA
is the same.
Yeah.
It's not different.
Yeah, so the question is, what's the difference, right?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
One's psychologically and the other is through genetic.
Well, yes, so the means are different. That's definitely right. But why does that make a normative difference, right? Why is it sort of ethically different when we do it at the genetic level as opposed to after the, you know, sort of like after the child is born?
So maybe it's because maybe I can... You may have genetically bred me this way, but I can choose to not do this.
Right.
But can you? Shouldn't you have bred him in a way not to fight who he is and what he is?
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe I'll say I'd rather just be a poet, and then you can't stop me. Whereas otherwise, if you're raising me this other way, then there's all this conflict.
Yeah.
You know, go to the gym, do your good, eat your three squares, whatever.
Right.
Or stay at the piano.
But,
and it's conflict at home.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can be genetic, you can have a genetic propensity, but then just decline the option.
Yeah. Boring house, though. I'd rather be like, I don't have a mom, and then slam the door, you know?
Yeah. Well, the problem is, what if you also genetically modify the motivations so that the child wants to be a super athlete or super pianist?
Could you make me want to be Neil deGrasse?
Maybe, you know?
I just want to be able to talk like this.
Oh, yeah.
We got another one? Okay.
So the answer is yes, it's possible, and it could happen.
Yeah.
And we need more of you, the ethicist, around at that time to either say no or yes to it.
Right.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Launchpad Cat, Instagram. Is there any such committees that regulates new technologies such as genetic tech or AI and puts regulators in place preemptively to prevent it from being used for amoral things like eugenics or something of that sort?
Mm-hmm. So the U.S. has a sort of...
Just remind people what eugenics is.
Right. Eugenicists,
No, remind people what eugenics is.
Oh, eugenics is this idea. It means well-born. And so it basically, you know, the Nazis were trying to breed these people to sort of, you know, like a certain race or certain class of people, thinking that some genes are better than others. And there's...
but even at a time when the concept of gene was not really... They just knew that if you breed two people who are desirable, presumably you'll get a desirable person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you prevent others who are undesirable from breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can systematically shift the balance in the population to be a demographic who you want and care about. So the Aryan ideal was then what was sought.
Isn't that happening in a way with breeding dogs and breeding purebreds and sort of inbreeding?
And plants and...
So like Irish setters are out of their minds. Right? They just, because they've been bred so much. We have a dog that we adopted. It's like a mutt and she's...
Totally chill.
Yeah.
But breeding.
We've been doing it with plants and animals.
That's right.
Other animals.
That's right.
But is there really going to be a board that's going to oversee this preemptively? I mean, I said this before, but like, look at the medical profession. There are a lot of questionable things that are going on in the medical profession.
Yeah.
And there's a board that oversees that preemptively.
The boards have ethicists on it.
That's right. That's right. There's sort of different research committees. They have oversight, sort of IRBs. So they're institutional. Research boards. And
institutional research board.
Yeah. And then they have ethicists on those boards to look over research, look over the experiments to make sure that they're ethical. The problem is that with these IRBs, it's sort of...
There's something like that.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to... the scientific community, there are rules about what animals you can do laboratory tests on.
Really?
Right. Like chimpanzees, there's certain things you can't do.
That's right.
Or that you can. And depending on... whatever someone's judgment, panel's judgment as to the value of that animal to the ecosphere or to whatever.
Yeah.
And other than PETA, if you're doing it to a rat, I don't think anyone cares.
I was going to say, the rat, like that poor thing gets slammed every time.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think it can be effective going forward?
Yeah, so the, I mean...
It's only effective if the researchers are responsible.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah, and also the value of the research has to justify whatever research that you're doing. So you can't just sort of... you know, torture these rats for fun.
You can't?
You cannot, right? Jesus. So that's very unethical, right?
And
so...
You should have told me that a couple of weeks ago.
You know, so in order to do research, even on animals, even on rats and mice, you have to be able to justify it to an institutional research board. You have to sort of say, why is this necessary? And there's no other way. You have to show that there's no other way.
Oh, yeah,
and this
yeah.
is sort of a less harmful way of doing it. The least harmful way of doing it.
And it's not the rat's fault it doesn't have hair on its tail, the way a squirrel does.
It'd look adorable.
Yeah,
it's not its fault. It's got a little, it's really pointy nose.
It's not its fault.
Yeah, exactly. It's just hanging out. Yeah.
It's not its fault it eats your garbage.
Well, now it's my fault. It's your I'm sorry I put my garbage out.
Squirrel eats nuts and rat eats your garbage and you don't like
right.
it.
Right. Pigeon, right? Rats with wings. Do we do experiments on those? We should. Look into that. Are we having another one?
Yeah, I guess keep going.
All right. Scotiashofrandon, Instagram. If in the future our noble intentions lead to the practice of genetically editing fetuses for preventing birth defects and future diseases, how do we avoid the pitfall of creating designer babies and the possible repercussions, genetic inequality, caste systems, etc.? And would it even be a pitfall at all?
Yes. So that's right. Like, would it even be a pitfall at all? Maybe this is something we should think about doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are good reasons to do it. For example,
but to do what?
To genetically have designer babies, to engage in genetic editing. So this is where we were talking about earlier that people, as soon as, you know, when they think about new technologies, they get very scared. But maybe there are good uses of these technologies. So just for example, if we want to sort of go... if we want to go to the moon or go to space, we want to make sure that we're more radiation resistant, mm-hmm. right? And so there's some sort of genetic thing basis where we can sort of be more radiation resistant. And so that's something that we should look into if we want to sort of.
So that means you breed people for certain jobs.
Yeah.
But this idea of like creating the perfect human, like I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if anybody wants that. I mean, everybody hates Tom Brady. Right? And that's about as perfect as you're going to get. I'm a Patriots fan saying that.
Here's where I would take that. Yeah. I would say, isn't so much of what we are, what we've been through to overcome what we're not?
Mm.
So that if you come out perfect, then where does your character get developed?
Mm.
Where is your sense of...
Because you're interacting in an imperfect world, right? So your perfection... is always challenged.
Well, I'm just saying who you are is almost always what you have overcome in life.
Absolutely.
If you're perfect, there's nothing for you to overcome. What do you got to show for anything?
Yeah. So you're saying it's unachievable to create a perfect person?
No, you can create a perfect person, but they will achieve nothing. That's what I'm saying. The real achievers, they stuff happened to them.
Hey, right. Doc, I was supposed to be perfect and I'm not. What's going on here?
Look at the real achievers in life. They've overcome something.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's
yes.
a broken family. There's mm-hmm. a thing. They have a lisp, but they've got a this. They have a limp.
A therapist gave me a list of people that, things that, people who were rejected, you know, that like Edison.
Yes.
Bell. No one's going to want to talk to each other far apart through a box. And they were rejected and rejected and overcame. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. So if you're perfect... you might be of no use to anyone.
Right, yeah. So I think there are two things to say there. So one is that, you know, human goals will change, like the better you get. So, you know, like my kids, when they're 5 years old, they like to play Go Fish, right? But now they're 10 years old, they don't play Go Fish anymore. It's too boring, right? Because you've kind of outgrown that, right? And so you can imagine that when we get smarter, there are other things, there are other challenges. You know,
that we don't even know of.
That we
right
don't
now.
Even know of right now, right? Okay. And then the flip side of that is, you know, if you really think that there's really value to being imperfect, then that can be, you know, there's an app for that. You know, like so make it more challenging.
Okay, take it back.
Should we do another question?
Yeah, real quick. Another question. Go.
Okay,
yeah.
Here we go. Yeah. Patrick Lynn, Facebook. Are there any red lines that we should not cross or maybe never cross in science and in ethics? And a related question, are there any ethical red lines today that you think should be rolled back?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, good one. And yeah. We don't have time to answer that because we have to take a break. When we come back, the red line. Should you cross it or not on Star Talk?
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
This is Star Talk.
We're back on Star Talk. Bioethics is the subject of this edition of Cosmic Queries. Matthew Liao, you're our ethicist. You're head of a whole center for bioethics. Everybody comes to you with their problems. Is that right? Is that how that works? I don't know. And always good to have you, Paul. So when we left off, there was a question about crossing red lines.
Yeah, this is Patrick Lynn, Facebook. Are there any red lines that we should not cross? And the related question is, have there been any red lines that you feel we've crossed that should be rolled back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there are many red lines that we shouldn't cross. So some people are, creating humans that'll be like slave humans, for example. I mean, that's an obvious one.
Doesn't that happen anyway if you create humans who are perfect? Then the humans who are not created perfect are left as slave to the perfect one.
Well, you really hate perfection.
No, then you're making a slave class, right, without purposely making a slave class.
Yeah. So there's this view that, I mean, even in our society now, sort of people have differential abilities, mm-hmm. right? But we think that everybody has equal, like they all have the same moral status,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so we could still
equal
have
under
that
the
view.
Eyes of the law.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. And so we could still have that, even if you have like some people who are perfect and other people not as perfect,
who
right?
would be enslaved by them.
Yeah.
And how about red lines that we have crossed that you would roll back today? I got one.
Yeah.
I'm old than all y'all, mm-hmm. To remember the announcement of the first test tube baby mm. that was born. That was banner headlines, mm-hmm. test tube baby.
Yeah.
And today, that's not even an interesting point to raise on a first date, whether you were in vitro or in utero right. conceived.
What right. were you like dating? Was that your opening line?
No, but there was a day that might have been a thing. Yes. Yeah, I'm a test tube baby.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, yeah. Tell me about
that's
it.
That's a really good point.
Well, right, right. Like, and so, and back then, people say, are we playing God mm-hmm. by fertilizing eggs in a test tube? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, of course you're doing it. This mm-hmm. is the fertility aid that goes on every day for mm-hmm. so many couples. So I bet that would be a line that existed back then that we cross, and now you would roll it back because mm-hmm. we're all just accustomed to it.
Right.
Would you agree?
Actually, we just ran a conference on the ethics of donor conception 2 weeks ago at mm. NYU, mm-hmm. and there were all these donor-conceived individuals, and they were saying that they shouldn't have been born.
Should not have been born. Why?
Yeah, they were because they feel that like they don't know who their genetic parents are. Uh-huh. They feel very isolated from there's just a lot of psychological.
Well, this
trauma.
Idea of God. I mean, yeah. if you're an atheist, yeah. right? Like, so this I was curious about this. Like, where does religion creep into this? Right.
Oh, good mm. point.
So like yeah. people start to go, well,
because ethics panels typically have a pastor or somebody mm-hmm, right. yeah. that brings a religious right. philosophy to the argument.
And yeah. if religion is not a part of my life on any level. Mm-hmm. Why am I leaving to this some ephemeral
That explains
being?
Everything about you.
I'm soulless,
you heathen,
everybody.
You heathen.
That's my tour, the soulless stand-up comedy.
You're going yeah. to hell.
But so, yeah. religion, the side.
Yes, yeah, so how does religion fold into this?
So
religious ethics, I guess.
Yeah, so some people look at ethics from a religious standpoint. So there's like divine command theory. What would God do, or what would God command in certain situations? So mm-hmm. so they would look at these issues from that angle.
Speaking for God on the assumption that they understand the mind of God, for having read books that they presume God wrote.
Right.
just want to clarify.
Yeah. Well, there's a view that there's the natural law view that what God would want is what our best reasoning, whatever we come up with our best reasoning.
At the time.
Yeah, at the time. Yeah. yeah. And so that's sort of a natural law type okay. view. So
I just don't know. I don't like, yeah. you alluded to this, bring a perfect person into the world, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of bioethics and whatever. Yeah. And it's like, but then you look at the world we live in, right? Like
yeah.
we're obsessed. Okay, we're going to make genetically enhanced corn mm-hmm. so we have better nutrition so that we're in better shape to kill each other. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's sort of like, I just feel like it's.
Here we
like,
do. We need a gene for rational thought. Let's work on that one, okay? Yeah. Get your people to,
yeah.
to
all right? Let's trademark it.
Yeah. Well, there are like a lot of people talking about moral enhancement. Like, can we enhance ourselves morally so that we're less aggressive and more sympathetic and empathetic to the plights of others, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I say yeah. screw other people.
next question, go. Yeah, okay. Go for it.
We are going to go to Dixon Clinton, Instagram. Combining CRISPR and ever-advancing AI will be the downfall of humankind, right? How many years do I have before I'm being murdered by cyborg overlords? Wow, you got to stop going to the movies.
Yeah, so when do we all die?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're all going to die.
Okay, right? Good. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's the question there.
So, some people like Ray Kurzweil thinks that, by 2050 we'll have super intelligence. Other scientists, AI scientists.
Ray Kurzweil, we have interviewed him on Star Talk live taping. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, and other people say it's not so, they're less optimistic, but they think that maybe by 2100 we'll have super intelligence. And so there's a real life issue. What happens when you have these really smart AIs that are, that are smarter than us?
We become their slaves.
We become their slaves, if we're lucky. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll just
become their pets.
Yeah. Or maybe we'll go out of existence.
I can see you sniffing your butt. Wow, so maybe I went too far there. I'm sorry. all right, this is Chris Cherry, Instagram. Right. Hi, Chris, from the Sunshine Coast, Australia. Not Austria, Australia. Should we fear DNA samples being required by health insurance companies and employers? Potentially, you could be discriminated against because of something you have no control over. Yeah, Chris, it's called race and ethnicity. It's happening every day. But
yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
You alluded to this about the insurance
company. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a real worry that as... more and more of our information are available, through genetic testing, et cetera, companies might use that in sort of inappropriate ways or unethical ways.
So an ethics board would say, no, insurance companies will not have access to your DNA.
That's right. Okay. Or maybe a society, maybe that's something that's beyond the ethics board. Something.
So don't leave a coffee cup that you sipped from in the insurance office.
Yeah. they swab it and send
just
it.
Just show up completely.
Swab your spit.
Hazmat suit and gloves.
All right, we got to go to lightning round. Okay ready? Right. Yep. So you're going to ask a question and Matthew, you have to answer it in a soundbite.
Okay.
Pretend you're on the evening news and they're only going to soundbite you.
Okay.
Okay? Go.
Okay, this is Justin Vilden from Instagram. What's your opinion on ethics of manipulation / creation of AI in general? Could we manipulate with it so far to come close to something resembling our own consciousness?
Not yet.
When?
It's hard to say. So I don't think we have figured out what consciousness is or, sort of the biological substrates of consciousness to be able to do that yet. None of the machine learning technologies right now can do that.
The day we understand consciousness, how soon after that do we program that into computers? The next day.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
No, okay, next question.
This is De Janeiro. Instagram. Do you think AI and humans will be integrated or DNA editing can be used to create superhumans like we see in X-Men?
I like that because if you can edit the DNA, what do you need the computer for?
Mm-hmm. That's
the question,
exactly,
right? Yeah.
So the computers might be faster, right? So they have more bandwidth.
The brain
is sort of very slow. It thinks very slowly. So you can imagine that once you can kind of augment through some sort of brain-computer interface, it gives you vast amount of storage, space, capacity, upgrade,
and perfect
capability,
memory.
And perfect
it's
memory.
It's none of this arguing about what happened. You
yeah.
know.
Right, exactly. I said this. No, I didn't forget to buy the milk.
Let's go to the videotape.
Yeah.
Right. This is a theme on many episodes of Black Mirror.
Yes.
By the way, yes, you should check it out on Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay, next.
Galaxy Star Girl Xbox Instagram. Do you think...
Whoa!
Excellent.
I love it.
And there's an underscore, but I left that out. Do you think the future of AI in society will bring about the less need for doctors? I believe doctors will still be needed, just in fewer numbers.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the numbers, but we're going to have wearables that are going to be able to track our heartbeats. Our toilets are going to be able to, analyze our stool, and sort of tell us whether we're healthy or not. And then that's going to be sent to doctors.
Do you want your toilet talking about your poop? just said.
If my toilet could talk, it would throw up.
But I think it's coming. Smart toilets are coming. So that's sort of that's the next business,
next.
Opportunity.
Okay. This is from Kristen Versailles, Instagram. I would like to know, what are the considerations to judge something as, quote, good or bad in the aspects of modifying an organism genetically, humans, for instance?
So I have this view that humans need some basic capacities, things like the ability to be able to think, to have deep personal relationships and things like that. And so I think that whatever we do with genetic modification, we shouldn't interfere with those core human capacities. And the flip side of that is if an embryo, like an offspring, doesn't have those capacities, then we should try to make sure that they have those.
In whatever genetic way. Mm-hmm.
In whatever
possible.
Genetic way.
And possible. Beyond that, it's just luxury items.
That's right.
Off of a shopping list.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Exactly.
All right, next.
Yeah.
Go.
Okay.
Got time for like one more.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
That'd be a good one, dude.
Wow, there's a lot of pressure here. Okay, this is Dagan Pleak, Instagram. We will attempt Will we attempt to splice human DNA with other animal DNA to make mutants of a sort? Would this conflict with our ethics? And what are your thoughts on creating new humanoid species? It's called a centaur, isn't it?
Or a minotaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it relates to what I just said earlier. I think as long as we don't affect those core fundamental capacities, sometimes we might look into these type of, like augmentations, these, combining
what
different
genes.
What
animal would you want to splice with a human?
I can tell you.
Would you want to be?
I'll tell you.
Let me guess.
I'll tell you in
a
my
dog, so you can sniff.
I'll tell you, in my concluding remarks, I will tell you.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. So we got time for just some reflective thoughts. So, Paul, why don't you go first?
I just think all of these questions that you deal with, it's endlessly fascinating and on some level open-ended, right? You seem to have the most subjective sort of job in a way.
Plus, you're like the calmest person I've
yeah.
ever met.
Yeah, which means you're up to no good.
Yeah, he's hiding something.
Yeah, exactly. Hiding something.
When you're that guy, you know something that we don't, right? We didn't get much into this, but this I know you've done a lot of work with manipulation of memory mm-hmm. for PTSD, mm-hmm. rape victims, et cetera, mm-hmm. and erasing thought. Is that making advancements?
Was that part of your TED Talk? Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And can I have it in September? Because I'm going to a reunion in high school and I want to wipe out the memory of asking Renee Sherlock to the prom and getting turned down twice. I want to wipe out her memory and mine.
Both memories. Oh, yeah.
Take some propranolol with you.
I knew you were in
drug dealer. He's got the drugs.
Is that fairly far along?
That's pretty far along, but you got to take it within 12 hours of asking someone to a prom. So,
it erases your short-term memory.
That's right. It stops it from consolidating into the long-term memory. There's another thing, something called ZIP. So there's this idea that
I'm not consuming anything called Zip.
Zip erases everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Zip erases everything. I'll see you after the show.
Yes.
So Matthew, yeah. give us some reflective concluding remarks here.
So I think these a lot of these new technologies there on the horizon. I think they have a lot of promises, but we also should worry about their we should be mindful of their ethical implications, and I think they can
further
help.
Keeping you employed.
That's right. So that it keeps me employed.
That's hilarious.
Right?
It keeps raising issues that aren't issues. No, that's an issue.
Not,
it is.
It's not an issue yet, but yeah.
it's
it
an
will
issue.
Be.
My kid's going to college next year. It's an issue.
Yeah. And I think ultimately our aim is to sort of create human well-being, human flourishing, and so we want to make sure that these technologies do that. Mm. So.
So here's what I think. Not that anyone asked.
Wait, Neil, what do you think?
Thank you, Paul. The fact that you can crossbreed the genetics of different species at all, mm-hmm. we do this often in the food chain, is a reminder that all life has some common DNA. So we should not be surprised that you can take a fish DNA, put it in a tomato. Just a reminder that we're all related genetically. So what I think to myself is, the human form is not some perfect example of life. I like the fact that newts can regenerate their limbs. Where's the gene sequence for that? Mm. Let's put that in humans and give it first to veterans who have lost their legs or arms.
Yeah.
And regrow our limbs.
Yeah.
If a newt can do it, and we have genetic editing, why can't we do it?
And why haven't we?
And well, maybe that's to come. But mm-hmm. I look at what is possible mm-hmm. in the experimentation of the biodiversity that is life on Earth and say, why can't we have some of that?
Exactly.
And that is a thought from the cosmic perspective. I want to thank Matthew Liao a second time on Star Talk. We will bring you back for sure.
Oh, thank you.
All right. And have fun down, not fun, but work hard. Thank make you. A better world for us, or help us make a better world for ourselves.
We keep creating issues that aren't really issues. So you have a job. By the way, best mind eraser is better than vodka.
Right.
Even invented.
Right.
Takes out those cells right there. Paul, always good to have you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. A lot of fun.
All right. Yeah. I've been and will continue to be Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, coming to you from my office at the Hayden Planetarium of the American Museum of Natural History. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.
sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.